Coming up on today's Next Fan Up podcast, it is the most epic super fan battle you have ever heard.
It's America against the Northeast.
The South. Yeah.
Two men enter.
When's the last time the man ate a chicken wing?
That is absolutely nothing like Tom Brady. Don't make me crawl through the phone and come find you.
One man leaves.
Apart from your 6 foot thingy, that's the best stat we've had on this pod tonight. That's terrific.
It's Super Bowl 51. Here we go.
Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next Fan Up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
But they are who we thought they were.
Hello and welcome to the Super Bowl edition of the Next Fan Up podcast. I am Pod Vader. I've got plenty of superfans here, not necessarily coming out of the wazoo, as the last time I was doing a podcast, but lots of superfans, including the two superfans that are most important in this particular week, being Tim for the Falcons, Patrick for the Patriots. It's the New England Patriots versus the Atlanta Falcons in Super Bowl 51. Let's introduce you to the other superfans that I have here with me this week, and we will start with our Steelers superfan, Greg. Greg, you are oh so close to being the AFC representative.
I don't know what you're talking about, but we're moving on to the draft, right?
Where's the draft this year? Is it in LA?
I don't know.
No, it's in Philadelphia.
It's in Philadelphia. Philly. That's right.
That's right, yeah.
So he's on to Philadelphia. Our Washington Redskins superfan, who was not oh so close to being the NFC representative.
That's for sure, Jay. Hi, guys. I'm looking forward to this game this weekend. It's going to be fantastic. It's the battle of the Atlanta Rogue One against the New England affiliated to the orange side.
I have no idea what you're trying to say there. But that doesn't change anything.
You know who the Orange Lord is.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I'm not going there. James is our Philadelphia Eagles correspondent who may have thought he was going to be the NFC representative at the beginning of the season, but didn't quite make it.
Not at all. And as of Sunday, I can officially say I'm a man. I'm 40.
Oh, well, happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday, James.
And representing one of the other NFC East teams from Prison Zone 6 in New York, it is Kevin, the Cowboy superfan, who was oh so close to being the NFC representative in the Super Bowl.
Yes, better luck next year. And since I'm only 27, does that mean I'm not a man? Because I've been in Prison Zone 6 like a long time, so I've toughened up a lot in here.
Mm, that's a good point. But maybe when you escape from New York, that is when you really become a man.
Okay.
All right, there are super fans. Please do reach out to us on Twitter at NFU Podcast. You can email us nextfanup@gmail.com. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher. Don't forget, you can always ask Alexa to play the Next Fan Up podcast, as she will want to do for you. And hey, before we jump right into the Super Bowl coverage here, one more promotion for you. Matt Chatham, Football by Football podcast. If you have not heard Matt Chatham breaking down the Colin Cowherd interview of Roger Goodell, the commissioner of the NFL, go ahead and do that. You can hit pause. I suggest you hit pause right now. Go listen to the Football by Football podcast and then come back. Okay. You did that? All right. Fantastic. Yeah, that was tremendous work by Matt Chatham. Just absolutely ripping both Colin Cowherd and Roger Goodell. Perhaps two guys that deserve a ripping. I'm just saying. But in any case, Roger Goodell will be at the Super Bowl, I believe. He's not in Atlanta this week. Is there any reports about that? He may have just stayed in Atlanta for the entire month of January. Anyone?
He said that when he was invited back to New England, he would happily go.
Oh, sure. And I believe Robert Kraft decided to say, perhaps the season opener will be a good time for you to come back, Roger, because we'll be hosting the NFL kickoff next season. Oh, putting the cart before the horse, Robert Kraft. Be a little careful about that. We don't want to jinx things. This is, by the way, the sixth time since the 1970 merger that the Super Bowl will showcase the team that led the NFL in scoring. That is the Atlanta Falcons against the club that allowed the fewest points. That is the New England Patriots. And with that, I will turn over the show to Tim, our Falcons superfan, and Patrick, our Patriots superfan, for what is quite possibly the most epic superfan battle you will ever hear.
Ladies and gentlemen, and everyone who listens to our show, all
that aren't,
how many people listen to our show, Patrick? Seven?
I don't know. I know my wife doesn't listen to our show.
My girlfriend doesn't listen to our show either.
Quiet. Yeah.
It's Tim, your Georgia 5th District Falcons fan, joined today by Patrick.
Representing all of New England.
All of New England. I'm just representing the 5th District. That's it.
That's right.
Yes. Me and John Lewis.
Better know your district.
Heading off to Houston. We're going to do this thing together.
There we go.
Patrick, how are we feeling? So let's give a little bit of a recap. It's Wednesday night, about 8:35 Eastern. We know nothing about the health of our players. I don't know what kind of weather we're looking at in Houston. I don't really know much about your team. Is it a dome?
Yeah, it's a retractable roof, but they keep it closed for games.
Interesting. Why have a retractable roof then?
Well, you got me. They opened it to display fireworks.
What are we here for today? We're supposed to break down the Atlanta Falcons.
We're here so that you can feel good about your football team. Because this is literally the best your team has ever been. And, you know,
no argument. This is the absolute best Atlanta Falcons team that has ever existed.
This is the pinnacle of your success. Like, you've never come. You're like Sisyphus, just about to get to the top of the hill.
We've been here before.
Yep.
Did not go well.
I remember that, and I am not a Denver Broncos fan by damn far.
I was 10 years old.
I was in college, but so we both enjoyed the game in very different ways.
Well, to give some perspective, at this point, my family's from Pittsburgh. I was raised a Steelers fan and then left because I can't deal with rapists and drug addicts and idiots. And I like the Falcons right now and for the past like 5-7 years. Ever since like Michael Vick went away and we drafted Matt Ryan and everything got really vanilla, I'm on board with vanilla.
Yeah.
Like me and my girlfriend do like fun stuff. We cuddle afterwards. Like, I'm that level vanilla.
Yeah, like Matt Ryan is like if somebody bought an ice cream cone and put it in a cup and left it in their car for half an hour, like that's Matt Ryan.
No, he is Matt Ryan is somebody goes out for ice cream and ends up with frozen yogurt.
Like, but not with anything interesting mixed
nothing.
In.
Nothing, just like just vanilla.
Yeah,
no toppings. No this toppings.
Is this is Matt Ryan. This is, whereas, so like, let me tell you what I like about Matt
Tom
Ryan.
Tom Brady is just like acai berry on top of your frozen yogurt, though. Like, he's not that much more exciting. It's just he's got, what, the Brazilian wife?
Well, he's got the Brazilian wife, and he's got the avocado ice cream because he doesn't eat ice cream. That's poison for your body. So he has ice cream made for him out of avocados. And then we'll lecture anybody in earshot about how you two can play football until you're 40 if you just adhere to the diet that he'll sell you for $800.
That's a good deal, though.
No, it's not.
It's really not.
It's really not. So, that, by the way, is the negative portion of this conversation about Tom Brady.
Okay.
Okay, well, I was about to actually give your team a compliment, Matt Ryan, a compliment, and like I will say that dude can distribute the football, and that is one way to beat Bill Belichick. If you want to find a way, it's to not be single threaded on one or two options like your family's team in Pittsburgh, right? Like, how do we whip up on Pittsburgh every year? Well, that's how. They have two elite players and they continually try to feed them the ball and we know that's happening and stop it, and then they don't have any other options. If we try and do that with Matt Ryan, like there's a reason why the Falcons are more successful when, you know, Julio Jones is shut down. Like if you hold Julio Jones to like five catches for 75 yards, you're probably doing it because you're double teaming him and leaving somebody else relatively uncovered or completely uncovered. And Matt Ryan's smart enough to know that, right? So that's how, that's in theory, like why the Falcons are better performing when Julio individually gets shut down. And that, you know, counters one of the great strengths of Bill Belichick. Having said that, I don't think that happens. I think we just roast you guys, but you know, I wanted to be nice and
roast us because I'm glad that you came at this with the perspective that you have in the way that the Falcons can beat the Patriots, because I've thought about this in the way that the Patriots can beat the Falcons.
Okay, good.
And the answer,
do we only have like an hour to cover this? Cause I know there's a lot of ground to cover there.
Because it's one specific thing. Like you said, the one specific thing on offense that if the Atlanta Falcons do this, then they have a good chance. If the New England Patriots do this one thing, then you guys have a really, really good chance against the Falcons. And it's slide run protection with LeGarrette Blount on the edge. We cannot stop power rushers, and we can't stop power rushers when they have offensive linemen pulling blocking. Our corners are not strong enough.
You don't have a lot of strength on defense. You have one really good pass rusher.
We have two really good pass rushers.
Do they come off the edge?
They both come off the edge, yes.
Meaningless to us then. Meaningless to us. Tom Brady gets rid of the ball too fast for that to be impactful.
I understand that, but you're also going against the fastest pass rusher in the league outside of Von Miller.
Great. Can he get to the quarterback in under 2 seconds?
Yes, and he has.
He also can't cover anybody. Like, I don't know, dude.
We can cover people.
Oh, you can't cover anybody.
Have you been watching? Have you watched a Falcons game lately?
Lately, no.
Okay, this team is completely different than at the beginning of the season. This isn't the team that's giving up 30 points to Tampa. This is a team that's averaged giving up 20 points. And we're talking about quarterbacks like Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, Cam Newton, like legitimate quarterbacks. And we're only giving up 20 points a game. And during that stretch, we're also beating our opponents by 15 points. So we're putting up like 33.5 on average during that stretch.
Also like us on average during the entire season, including with our third string quarterback.
You did not put up 33 points a game. No other team in the NFL was within 5 points per game.
Okay, fair enough.
The only team put up over 30.
That's because we did get shut out one game with our third string.
Doesn't matter.
Kind of impacted the average a bit.
Well, I mean, it shouldn't have impacted the average all that much. Who did you play that game? You played the Bills?
Buffalo. Yep.
Okay. Can you name a coach in Buffalo?
With our third string rookie quarterback drafted in the third round who is playing with a broken thumb on his throwing hand.
I understand. You should have planned accordingly. You knew Brady was going to be out for 4 games. You should have protected Garoppolo.
We did. That's why we drafted that guy in the third round.
All right. That's a different level of protection than I was referring to. I was talking about like pass protection.
So we did. We left Rob Gronkowski in to block for most of those 4 games.
That's a terrible decision. He's not good at that.
Rob Gronkowski?
He is receiving tight end. He's
Rob
not
Gronkowski
a guy that you leave in
arguably
to block.
The best blocking tight end in football.
No.
Yes.
No.
That's what makes
I'm gonna teach you about it, boy. And you're gonna learn about him. You're gonna learn about this guy on Sunday. His name is Lavine Toilolo.
Lavine Toilolo and his 20 yards per catch average or whatever it is.
Yes, and he's a wonderful blocker. You want to know when he learned how to block?
Wonderful.
It was
his mother.
Game.
I'm sure is gonna be wearing a Lavine Toilolo jersey in the stand.
Actually, she wears a Matt Ryan jersey. They don't make Toilolo jerseys. They make one,
you
and
can,
he wears
dude,
it.
Dude, I can get a Patriots jersey with your name made on it for like $180.
Well, I mean, in my defense, I'm a more popular figure than Lavine Toilolo.
I
probably have more Twitter followers.
I will concede that point.
Lavine Toilolo is the guy who was on Hard Knocks playing ukulele with all the guys around him at the hot tub. But he can block, and he learned how to block in the game that our right tackle went out against the Vikings, and then he had to play right tackle the rest of the game. Trial by fire, my friend.
Yep.
You know, he learned, and he's going to be amazing. I firmly believe that this is going to be a fun game, and it's going to end like 34-30. It's going to be back and forth the whole time. And we're both going to be hammer time on Sunday night when we get around to talking about this. And Pod Vader or somebody's going to have to be on with us to keep us on track so we don't go for 7 hours of just drunken crying nonsense.
Well, you're going to want somebody other than Pod Vader. If you're looking for somebody to right the ship and keep it on the rails.
If New England wins and Pod Vader comes on, I'm going to bring backup.
But Pod is going to be like out of his mind either way. Like he is not the guy that you want driving the ship, to mix the metaphor yet a third time.
Patrick, I want your offensive and your defensive X factor if the Patriots are going to win.
Offensive X factor. I'll go with, you know what? For weeks I've been saying Chris Hogan, but he's not really an X factor anymore. Someone's going to actually try and guard him in this game. Here's the thing about the Patriots and what Belichick does better than anybody arguably ever has. Takes a look at the film at what did not work and says, we're not going to do that. Right? So if Belichick tells every guy, here's two things you need to avoid doing. If you avoid doing them, we're going to win. And everybody does their job by just not doing those two things. The Patriots win. Right? And it's a boring ass way to win. I say it every week. It's the most boring defense you've ever seen. They give up plays. They give up plays. They give up plays. And then some guard jumps off sides and backs them up. Right? And now they can't complete the drive. And they have to punt. Or some quarterback gets frustrated or starts thinking he's better than he is because he's completing every pass. He throws into double coverage and gets one picked. Right? And like all of a sudden the drive is stalled. We surrender no points or a field goal. Quarterbacks just complete a ton of passes for a ton of yards, but ultimately don't get where they're trying to get to. And we win the football game. Happens damn near every week. And it's boring to watch, but it's oh so effective. And that's why. It's because they don't screw up, right? They stay disciplined. They keep the play in front of them. They let guys catch passes, but not run past them, you know, and that's probably what we're going to see in Atlanta. We very well could see Matt Ryan break the yardage record. I think it's what, like 415? Like it's something pretty attainable.
Yeah, but, I'd say pretty attainable, but I think he only passed that like once or twice this year. I mean, one of them was against Carolina when Julio torched Ben Benwickery for 300 yards.
Yeah, so, that was insane.
Yeah, Ben Benwickery does too.
That's not going to happen with us.
The last day he actually worked.
On defense, I think it's easier to do. On defense, I think we collapse the center of your line. You're playing with a hurt center, right? We have two really big, strong defensive tackles. If we just crash the line pretty damn well continually, you're going to have Matt Ryan scrambling, not setting his feet. We'll play some bump coverage on the outside to disrupt timing routes. I know you can't really do that reliably with Julio, but whatever, we're going to do it anyway because refs are swallowing their whistles this season anyway. So I think that's what you'll see. So our defensive X factor is big, fat defensive tackles. On offense, probably big, fat right tackle, Cannon. Hate him. I've always hated him, but he's having a pretty good year. And if you're saying all we need to do is, what'd you say, run off tackle or stretch plays with big backs, something like that?
Yep.
Like, we'll do that. We'll do that
off
all day.
To the left.
That's fine.
Got to run to the
Tom
left.
Tom Brady doesn't need to throw the ball. He needs to run to the left.
Yep. Run to the left. And run at Dwight Freeney. Run at Vic Beasley, and Vic Beasley's going to be playing spy. Like, they'll adjust. But if you run at Dwight Freeney, that's where you're going to win.
Man, we've been running at Dwight Freeney for like 20 years.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? I'm happy to have him. So he turned Vic Beasley into a potential bust from that into the NFL sack leader. So, yeah.
There we go. He turned us into a bunch of AFC champions every time we played Indy.
Hey, he has a ring with Indy. He's got one.
That's cool. We got tons of rings against Indy.
I understand.
Yeah.
So my turn. My offensive X factor is actually going to counter your defensive X factor. I was going to say the offensive line and specifically Alex Mack, but I'm going to change it up. And I'm going to say it's going to be our tight ends.
Yeah, that's half your team, you realize.
Don't pull a lady on Madden
on me.
So I'm going to say Austin Hooper and Levine Toilolo. Well, we rotate. It's not like there's one guy in. All right, Austin Hooper, our rookie tight end out of Stanford, third round pick.
Tight end.
If the Patriots are playing correctly, you have Eric Rowe with McCourty over the top on Julio the entire game.
Maybe.
I say Rowe because he's your bigger corner.
I don't know why. Eric Rowe doesn't play disciplined football.
I understand that, but if you want to win, you pick the guy in your secondary who does play disciplined football in McCourty to support your big guy who can actually potentially line up and bump Julio.
No, bumping Julio is good and having the
Because if you put Malcolm Butler right there, no disrespect, Malcolm Butler is phenomenal, but there is a distinct man on boy difference right there. Just looking at the two of them.
Except that I'd put Logan Ryan on.
All right, I mean,
Logan Ryan's not going to give up the 15-yard penalty.
That's fair, but I mean, if it's to the point where, you know, I mean, Matt's not going to be looking for the 15-yard penalties. He's going to be going through his progression, and if Julio's not there, he's not going to force it to Julio. That's how we win, like, is he doesn't force it to Julio. That's why I'm saying the tight end.
If he throws to Julio, like, Julio gets mugged. If he doesn't throw to Julio, but Julio breaks to get open, Julio gets mugged, right? So, like, I think Eric Rowe, I loved Eric Rowe coming out of school, and I still think he's a good player, but I don't want him having anything to do with a guy that's going to draw a lot of attention.
That's fair.
And put him on Sanu, although Sanu's kind of, like, he's too quick and too smart. Like, he'll probably
Sanu, man. That's two like superlatives that I don't think we would have given him in the offseason when he signed that contract. And everybody's like, what is happening? Sanu is a different man this year. He's been really, really good. I'm happy to have him on the team. But my defensive X factor,
hard.
I'm going with another rookie. And it's our rookie first round pick. I'm going Keanu Neal. And the reason I'm going to say that is because in the first quarter, at some point, he's going to hit somebody to where who's doing broadcasting? Joe Buck?
Yeah, Joe Buck.
Joe Buck will say the words. He expect him to get a letter from the league office because Keanu Neal is going to kill a man, and then at halftime, Lady Gaga is going to sing Queen. So I'm just throwing it out there that Tom Brady's going to have to be a little bit concerned going across the middle because Deion Jones and Keanu Neal are just going to set the tone there to the point where, like, if it was college, it'd be considered targeting. And yeah. I think that's really, really, really going to be critical is for us to show that on defense, we're going to be the more physical team. And if we do not do it, you guys win and you win and it's not pretty for Atlanta to the point where like we kind of just fade into obscurity again, kind of like when Bobby Petrino left, like we just leave a note in every player's locker, like we'll see you guys in August. Don't worry about minicamp.
You know what the Patriots do to over-aggressive safeties, right?
This is a different over-aggressive safety. This is a smart.
This is a rookie over-aggressive safety.
He's not over-aggressive. He just likes to hit people.
Okay. If I were his coach, I would tell him to slow down, square up, keep the play in front of you, because we're going to run crossers over him all the time and make him commit and leave somebody open and exposed, right? Unless he has help over the top, which you don't normally see from a safety. We're going to have guys running free down the sideline.
Just be careful on sidelines. I want you to go and look up defensive like efficiency along the sidelines. We're actually really, really good against the sidelines. So, all right, I need your final score prediction. And I want your real final score prediction. I don't want like your Patriots super fan hat prediction. I want your legitimate, you're an analyst. What do you think the final score to this game is?
27-20 Pats.
27-20 Pats?
Yep.
Wow. All right. I'm going to go 34-30 Falcons.
It's a pretty high-scoring Super Bowl.
Man, come on. It's going to be high-scoring. We have the best offense in recent history, potentially all time.
We have a defense.
Yeah, but you've only played one quarterback all year that's worth anything, and it was Russell Wilson, and he beat you.
Okay. Fair enough.
I'm just saying, like you're up against the league MVP this year. No disrespect. Matt Ryan deserves it.
Mm-hmm.
Like he took a team that went, 2-6 down the stretch last year and turned them into the second seed. In essence, the first seed in the NFC because Dallas is hot garbage.
But in essence, the second seed. as opposed to the Patriots' first seed.
Okay. Congrats.
Where our quarterback was prohibited from playing
before games. 7 bye weeks
because
you play in your division.
Oh, please. Our division's actually not that bad. If you look at
the Jets, if you look at the
team's records outside of divisions, it's actually pretty good. They have a bad reputation because the Patriots hang two losses on everybody every year.
Well, the Falcons play the toughest schedule in the NFL this year, and they made it this far. So, including multiple games without Julio Jones, I think this is going to be a really fun game either way, whether it's 27-20 Patriots or 34-30 Falcons. I think everybody's going to be able to get behind this. It's America against the Northeast.
The South, yeah.
America is ready to rise up against the oppression. They're rising up against Robert Kraft and his photo with Vladimir Putin.
Is this the war of northern aggression all over again? When are you guys going to let that go?
This is the war of John Lewis versus Donald Trump's friends.
What?
Yes. Robert Kraft, Bill Belichick, and Tom Brady are all his pals. And he and Donald Trump came and attacked my district and said it was terrible. That's why we're the District 5 Falcons. This is the Hunger Games. And we are ready to rise up. And we will take what is rightfully ours. This isn't the South will rise again. This is the Falcons are rising up and they're going to reclaim glory that's never been claimed before in Atlanta. We need this so bad. We have one championship in like 168 combined professional seasons. We've lost two hockey teams. The Falcons have been here 51 years with one attendance in the Super Bowl, and we lost because our safety couldn't just hook up with a girl in a bar, decided to pay some street cop, and the day he wins the Man of the Year award, The Braves in the 90s could only win it once because the Yankees, and you guys are essentially the Yankees of football, so down with Derek Jeter,
aka Tom Brady.
Everything is going to be good again because the Falcons are amazing. There's a reason the sun is shining in Atlanta, and it sucks in Boston right now, and it's because God even believes it, and I'm not even religious. Let's go, Falcons.
Okay. I love you. I understand your vitriol, and I appreciate it, but don't ever call a Boston team a Yankee. Like, come on.
You guys are the Yankees of football right now, and you know it.
No, only in our greatness. The Yankees succeeded because they went out and they acquired the most free agents every year. That's not
and
how
then they brought on Alex
football.
Rodriguez, who was cheating, which is essentially another Tom Brady.
That is absolutely nothing like Tom Brady. Don't make me crawl through the phone and come find you. Like,
okay, look.
Alex
Rodriguez
the
does
paid
PEDs,
free agent on the market.
Tom
and that's
Brady
Yankees
does
move.
Almonds and avocados. I see no difference.
Oh, I hate you.
When's the last time the man ate a chicken wing? Patrick, I look forward to talking with you on Sunday night. Hopefully it's not too late. Like, I hate Super Bowls that end at like 1 o'clock in the morning because they start at like 6 p.m. and that's miserable. So
what you got, man? We're going to see so many commercials for things we do not care about.
We're going to go to seven overtimes.
We're going to get so much 70s classic rock in the commercials and animals that sing and babies that sing. And like, what other tropes can we have like paraded out before us? When's the last time you saw a creative Super Bowl commercial?
Hey, the new Budweiser one's not bad.
I haven't seen it.
It's about how the people at Anheuser-Busch were immigrants. It's very politically charged.
Oh, good.
I feel like we're going to have a lot of politically charged commercials this year.
Roger Goodell is Donald Trump. They're the same dude.
Everyone, enjoy the Super Bowl. Do not tweet at me during it if the Falcons are losing. I will block you.
Done. Don't block me.
You've already been blocked.
Oh,
you
really?
Been. No.
Oh.
No. Patrick, I love you. Have a wonderful week, and I will talk to you on Sunday.
All right, man. I'll talk to you later.
First of all, Greg, let's start with a couple of things that Tim mentions here. He's not a Steeler fan, despite growing up in Pittsburgh, because he didn't want to root for rapists, drug addicts, and idiots. He was 10 years old when the Falcons were in the Super Bowl. Apparently, sexual deviancy wasn't a problem for him.
Yeah. I don't know what to say about this. This feels a lot like Groundhog's Day, you know, over and over again. And that happens to be February 2nd. So I'm just going to leave it there.
Yeah, by the way, Tim, I don't know a football team that doesn't have at least one, if not all three of those things. on currently on their roster. So, I mean, I don't know if you could be rooting for any of these football teams if those, if that's your qualifications. Also, Tim mentioned Keanu Neal. I believe he's mentioned Keanu Neal, I think, on every single appearance he's made on this podcast. Neal, you're one of the guys that listens to every show. Is that true?
I think probably anybody who's called Neal, it's a good thing for me.
All right, let's go to the injury report here, James. I believe everyone's mostly healthy.
Mostly is a loose interpretation. There are several people showing up on the injury report due to nagging injuries through the latter part of the season. Starting with the Falcons, Julio Jones, of course, we know his toe has been limiting him in practice. We know he's going to play. Alex Mack has been limited in practice with a fibula injury. We know he's going to play. The Alex Mack one is probably key here to be watching out for all Falcon fans, because that could wreak havoc if he misses any time during the game whatsoever. On the New England side, wide receiver Malcolm Mitchell and tight end Martellus Bennett both have knee injuries. They were limited in practice, and Chris Hogan has a thigh injury. He was limited in practice. Other than that, the only person showing up on the injury report is DB Nate Ebner, who's in a concussion protocol still.
Yeah, and Nate Ebner is a special teams player and nothing more. And his impact on this game, I don't want to minimize it, because special teams could be a factor.
Special teams was one third of the game. They could be a factor.
Yeah, it's a very solid point there.
I feel like that's a mandatory comment from our Eagles fan in general.
I never belittle special teams, especially not when Darren Sproles is coming back for his last year. I'm never going to belittle special teams.
All right, so let's get into this. Let's hear how you guys are looking at this game. I will tee you each up with a random, unnecessary stat about the upcoming game. Both of these teams had faced five common opponents. They both finished, New England finished 4-1, Atlanta finished 5-1. Both of these teams lost to Seattle. Atlanta got that extra win because they faced Seattle twice. Otherwise, they had beaten their common opponents in the Cardinals, the Broncos, the LA Rams, and the San Francisco 49ers, Greg.
Okay, well, you know what? Looking back on the Steelers-Patriots game, I was really impressed. And the reason I said that kind of like that was because what they demonstrated in the AFC title game was that they're willing to throw out sets they've only used, you know, maybe nine times during the entire season, as in the four wide receiver sets, and totally change their offense, even not just year to year, but even it seems like game to game still. So I like that about the Patriots offense a lot. I don't know. I'm kind of looking forward to a high-scoring game here. I mean, relatively high. I don't think it's going to be above 30 for either team, but a lot of action. And I'm going to go with the Patriots in the game, mainly just so Brady retires.
You think if Brady gets the one for the thumb, he's all done?
If he loses, he's not retiring. So I'll take a 1% over zero.
All right. Neal, as I had mentioned before we started, that the Falcons, the highest-scoring team in the NFL this year at 33.8 points per game. The Patriots scored 27.6 points per game. I had read something that was championing about the Falcons being the first team to enter the Super Bowl, winning their last six by 30 or more points. However, if you want to be random and just take a random number, if you look at the Patriots, they've won their last four by 34 or more points in the last four games. By
I think
scoring
that points
that
to what
points,
Greg,
not differential. Anyway, yeah, go ahead, Neil.
Sure. I think that points to what Greg was saying there. It's going to be a fairly high scoring matchup. It's one of those games. It's really exciting. We've got the best offense since the greatest show on turf. I think that's a fair thing to say. That Atlanta offense has powered through everybody we've seen just about this season. It's been at times breathtaking to see that offense in action. You've got Matt Ryan there, 120-plus passer rating. This season, well, I think the last the last 7 or 8 games of this season, and that's terrific. Nobody's done that in the Super Bowl era. Is he 5-1 against Super Bowl winning quarterbacks this year? That's also very impressive, and I think we all know the stat around New England not having faced a top 10 quarterback this season. I think Russell Wilson is the only sort of, you would say, top level quarterback they've actually faced this season, and I think New England lost that game.
They played Ben.
Yeah. Yeah, played Ben, yeah. And not in the regular season, though. Huh? They played Landry Jones in the regular season, though.
No? Correct.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah. So, Landry Jones, of course. Yeah, the great Landry Jones. What I do like about Atlanta is that they have the best unit on the field, in my opinion, in their offense. And a little, maybe I'm surprised about their defense, and maybe Tim mentioned this on in his battle there. That defense was giving up 27.6 points a game in their first 12 games, but they slowly developed across the season, and in the last 6 regular season games, they gave up only 19.3 points per game. And I think that's maybe the unsung part of the Atlanta game. But
time out, Neil, because stats can always tell you whatever story you want to tell. I have the last 5 games looking at me. They played the Niners, who scored 13, the Panthers, who scored 16, but the Saints scored 32, the Seahawks scored 20, and the Packers scored 21.
That was probably still a workout in 19.3 points a game, though, Jay.
I'm sure it did, but still, I'm just saying, when you look at who skewed that average, the Niners and the Panthers weren't exactly world beaters this year.
No, sure, fair enough. You can have that, but I still think it shows or demonstrates some improvement in that young defense as the season wore on. And I think that is important. The defense was better, or is better at this point than it was in the first few weeks of the season. So they also have the NFL sack leader, which is, it's pretty good. They get a bit of pressure. But you do look at this game and you think, are we seeing, to a certain extent, what we saw last season? Last season with the Carolina Panthers, whose offense tore through the league for 15 regular season wins. But when it came up against a half-decent defense and a very experienced veteran quarterback, they couldn't get it done, and Denver won the game. And I wonder if we're seeing the same here in this game. And as much as my heart goes for Atlanta to win, because it's nice to see another team getting their name on that Super Bowl trophy. It's just so difficult to bet against Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots. So give me the Patriots 31-27 in a really exciting game. But hey, I would quite like to see a little bit more attention. Certainly, having listened to your podcast yesterday, Jay, with the Mats, it was very New England centric, and I think that's maybe not doing the Falcons quite the level of justice that they deserve. They've had a great season, and that offense is absolutely spectacular to watch. But England to win the game.
We gave the Falcons their props where they were required. Just to defend the interview with the Mats, if you missed it, Matt Chatham, Matt Williamson joined us all postseason, and we thank them both for their time all postseason to break down these playoff games. And they joined me again to talk about this particular matchup. So you can go and check that out. And because all I know are Mats, Matthew Berry joined me just last week on this podcast. So if you missed that, you're definitely going to want to subscribe on iTunes so that you don't miss any of the shows, and you can go back and check our archive and listen to those podcasts. They are both very entertaining listens. James, I had an idea of where I wanted to go with you, and then I got completely distracted by some of the things that Neil was saying. But I will mention to you the last time these two teams played was in 2013. The Patriots won 30-23. Tom Brady had his normal Tom Brady good game, but Kenbrell Tompkins was the star for the Patriots then. This just in, Kenbrell Tompkins no longer on the Patriots.
Who's Kenbrell Tompkins?
It's a good question.
It was a fantasy sleeper in 2013.
He's Antonio Brown.
Yeah, 2013, 4 years ago. Wow. I don't even think half these players were even in that game then. Two things I want to start out with taking away from this game is two significant losses that each of these teams had. With Atlanta, I want to go back to the Philadelphia game in which they were 0-for-whatever on third down in that game in Philadelphia. Granted, it was in Philly. Four-man pressure really caused problems for the offensive line in getting in the face of Matt Ryan. And I think that's going to be key for New England if they can find a way to generate that. Since their trade with Cleveland earlier this season, I haven't seen much four-man pressure from them in the Patriots front. It's been through scheme and blitzes, mostly in coverage in the secondary, as far as how they've been getting pressure on quarterbacks. If you can do that against Atlanta and you can get in the face of Matt Ryan's, particularly pressure up the middle, you can do some damage to this offense and slow them down, particularly provided you can also control the ground game in the process. On the flip side with New England, I look at their loss to the Seattle Seahawks, who didn't get a lot of pressure on Brady, but got it in key points throughout the game. And, you know, even though it came down to that last play to Gronkowski in the end zone being covered by Cam Chancellor, Dan Quinn pretty much coaches up the same defense that Seattle plays. So it's not like Brady and the Patriots haven't seen this defense before, but the secondary, I don't think, has a player with more than 3 or 4 years experience in it. These are very young guys. They've all found their roles as far as, you know, Seahawks South, if you will, as far as that secondary. I'm not going to call them what they call the secondary in Seattle. That would be disrespectful. But we mentioned Keanu Neal earlier, who's pretty much filled the void of that Cam Chancellor enforcer role, trying to knock almost everybody out who comes across the middle. And he's done a good job of it, especially in the two games in the playoffs. But this is a different animal. The Patriots like to outflank you with deployment of wide receivers and tight ends and running backs, in obscure positions out wide. The only knock I have against them is that without Gronkowski out there, even though they put up points, they have struggled to do so as far as moving the ball. They don't control the middle of the field with the passing game like they normally do with Gronkowski. And even though Martellus Bennett is a capable backup, he's still not Gronk. He doesn't command the attention, and he doesn't get lost as much as Gronkowski does in their passing game. You know, typically you see Gronk running wide open. You're trying to figure out who was supposed to be covering him, whether it was man or zone. Bennett always seems to have a man draped over him no matter where he's lined up or what route he's running. The Patriots also like to...
I'm going to jump in real quick there, James, and just... Martellus Bennett has been playing all season with apparently bone chips in his ankle. He's going to require some major off-season surgery. So I don't want to take anything away from Martellus Bennett because he was a beast at the beginning of the season, filling in quite nicely for Gronk. And the second thing is he doesn't need to be wide open when Chris Hogan isn't covered on the football field.
That's what I was going to get to. It seems that Chris Hogan has been filling more of the Gronkowski role in the passing game than Martellus Bennett, because in the two playoff games that they played against Pittsburgh and Houston, he was the one screaming wide open down the middle of the field, and we're trying to figure out why was no one on him. Ultimately, I think the lines, as always, are going to play the biggest part in this game. Whichever team can get pressure on the opposing quarterback without having to blitz and can still control the opposition's running game will have the better chance of winning. If Atlanta can pretty much do what they've been doing in the postseason, which is scoring touchdowns on their first, 4 to 6 drives of every game, it could be problematic for New England to keep up if they have to play that way, especially if their defense isn't getting stops. I'm going to be the contrarian here. I'm pretty sure everyone's going to go one way. I'm picking the Falcons.
I would not expect anything less.
How does the game...
I'd like to pick nobody, but since two teams are playing and none of them are a team I would support for any reason whatsoever, I've got to pick somebody. So let's pick Atlanta.
Just in 10 seconds, James, what scenario has to happen for the Falcons to win? And don't say they score
more
points.
Pressure on Tom Brady. Pressure on Tom Brady. That's pretty much it. Just pressure on Tom Brady.
And how do they expect to get this pressure? As Patrick pointed out in the superfan battle, Vic Beasley or Dwight Freeney off the edge isn't going to do it. Brady's going to step up into that pocket. His pocket awareness is quite good. Plus, he gets rid of the ball in less than 2 seconds with edge pressure. They got to get it up the middle, and that's not a strength for Atlanta at all. They're not a bigger, stronger team. They're a quicker, faster team.
I think Dan Quinn will find a way to coach him up.
All right. Well, Kevin, the line is -3 for the New England Patriots. And the ridiculous stat that I'm going to throw to you isn't even really all that ridiculous. Just points out how even these two teams I expect to see, in that the plus minus on giveaway takeaways is +12 for the Patriots, +11. For the Falcons. So turnovers are big for both of these teams.
Yeah, you're completely right about that. Both teams take care of the ball extremely well. The one area the Patriots do seem to have trouble taking care of the ball is on kick/punt returns for whatever reason. I think they fumbled 11 times this year, which leads the NFL in during punt/kick returns. So the Falcons, they really need one of those to happen. I don't even want to say have a chance, because it's the Super Bowl and the Falcons are playing lights out. And much like James, I really do want to pick the Falcons. Like I tried looking up all the stats I could to justify it, and I found some pretty good ones as well, but I just can't do it. And I have some Belichick stats I'll throw out there later for you to tell you why I can't do it. But I also have another ridiculous stat for you, just since you led with that. Not so ridiculous stat, but I was reading somewhere. Okay, here's my ridiculous stat. The Patriots have allowed only one playoff touchdown to any first team all-pro receiver standing 6 feet or taller, which would be Julio Jones.
That is a ridiculous stat. That is well done.
Where did that come from?
I don't know. And they've only allowed 200-yard games to such receivers, one being Mushin Muhammad in the Super Bowl in 03 or 04, whenever that was, and one being to your boy T.O. James in the very next year. But, yeah, so those are some fun stats I just wanted to throw out there, not that they mean anything. The Falcons, though, as everyone has said, if their offense has been completely lights out this year. And as Neil said, they're averaging 33 points per game this year. In the playoffs, they're actually averaging 40 points over their last their two games. I'm trying to find some Falcon stats here just to talk them up, because you and the Mats, according to Neil, were too New England centric. But I just can't do it. I can't do it because these two stats are absolutely ridiculous that I found about Belichick. The Patriots' record with Belichick and Brady in the playoffs against teams that they didn't face in the regular season is 12-0, and they didn't face the Falcons in the regular season. They're 12-9 in rematches in the playoffs, but as I said, they didn't face the Falcons in the regular season. So that 12-0 stat, although you may think it's ridiculous, I think that is pretty concerning for the Falcons. And then another one that's concerning is this will be Dan Quinn's first time coaching against Belichick. And coaches, anyone want to take a wild guess at what the record for coaches in their first career game against Belichick is?
0-4.
No, but almost. 3-22. Not very good. Not very good at all.
But so Quinn was the coordinator the last time that Belichick and Brady won a Super Bowl.
Okay, he was a D coordinator, but not the head coach.
True. But he's got some experience against his offense.
Okay, yeah. So we'll give the Falcons a little bit of credit for that. I mean, Dan Quinn, this will be his third Super Bowl in 4 years, so he's no stranger to the stage. So that's definitely a positive for the Falcons. The one hope that the Falcons, I think, do have is the Patriots aren't that good at covering pass catching running backs out of the backfield. They gave up the second most receptions to running backs this season and the third most yards. So Tevin Coleman, I think, is going to need to have a pretty big game for the Falcons to pull off this victory. But on the flip side, the Falcons actually had the worst defense against pass catching running backs, the worst in terms of allowing receptions and yards. So Deion Lewis or James White, whoever it is going to be, I think it's going to have a big game. I mean, the last time the Patriots were in the Super Bowl, Shane Vereen had 11 receptions. So I think either Lewis or White are going to have a pretty big game. But yeah, I guess I'll go with the Patriots. I don't really want either of them to win. Hopefully I'll be in some sort of coma from eating too many wings by the time the winner is crowned, then I won't remember it. But give me the Patriots. I do think it's going to be a good game, though. Hopefully high scoring. I think the over-under is around like 58, which is one of the highest in Super Bowl history.
58.
But give me the Patriots here, 30 to 27. So 1 point. So, yep, 30 to 27. I guess we'll give Steven Gostkowski a last-second field goal. So Adam Vinatieri can't be the only kicker to be the, you know. Anyways, yeah, I'm done with this game. Let's go to 2017.
I'm glad you brought up Gostkowski because we are looking. We're trying so hard to find something that could give the Falcons the edge. And if we want to look at the kickers, Gostkowski has missed three point after attempts so this year, which is way more than what we're used to here in New England. Matt Bryant has missed only one. And in terms of field goals, Gostkowski has missed five and Bryant has missed three. I don't know what the distance are on those field goals, but I can tell you just from the eye test, Gostkowski has not seemed like his normal regular machine self. Certainly not the most accurate kicker in NFL history, which is what he was before this season. So
Graham
if we're going to look
has that honor.
If we're going to look at a if we're going to look at a at an advantage, we can look at the kickers. The other thing that I'm looking at in terms of this game is I look at both of these teams' offenses as a push. I look at the special teams as mostly a push, maybe a slight edge now that I just read those stats to the Falcons. But when it comes to the defenses, I do think that the Patriots defense is much better than what the Falcons defense is. You did mention that the Patriots have that difficulty covering those pass catching backs, and I agree. And Matt Williamson brought up that the Patriots will probably come out playing their power nickel with three safeties. I don't know if that's necessarily going to work against a team that runs the ball as well as the Falcons do. I think if the Patriots stick to their nickel defense, that the Falcons are going to be able to gain the yards on the ground. I think Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman, that two-headed backfield, is going to be too much for the defense to stay in that sort of alignment for the entire game. So that is definitely an area where I have concern. I don't feel super confident about the Patriots winning. I do believe that the Patriots are going to win, and not just because I'm a Patriots fan, but because of the fact that I do believe the Patriots defense ultimately will overcome the shortcomings that I just mentioned there. But, you know, I look at my wife's squares, Pats 0, Falcons 5. I mean, that is not, that doesn't look good to me. So I'll say 30-25.
Yeah.
You know, I sort of look at the last two playoff games for the Patriots where, you know, things were looking, you know, a little tense for the Patriots going into the fourth quarter against the Texans, but ultimately they end up winning quite comfortably. I think there were times, Greg, when the Steelers were sort of putting up some yards, but ultimately the Patriots end up winning comfortably. It's been an odd season for the Patriots in that manner, where a lot of these games, and Patrick really pointed it out, the Patriots play that bend, don't break defense, which is sort of cliche, but they really do. They just sort of let the other team take the short intermediate routes and yards and let them get to right around that 40 to 30 yard line on the other side of the field. And then they just clamp down. And if the Falcons have to kick field goals, that's definitely going to end up for them to be losing. I know, Neil, you've brought up, do the Falcons need to get out to a 10-0 lead. I do think that that would be their, that would obviously be in their best interests. but at the same time, you know, the Brady is not going to crack under the pressure of playing from behind. We can sit here and discuss who actually has the best in-game adjustments, but I brought this up with the Mets as well. Nobody makes adjustments better than Bill Belichick and company.
It's
that would be the one area that I would look at in terms of if the Patriots are behind at some point in this game.
I think my question about the getting a 10-point lead or so, Jay, it's more about the Atlanta Falcons offense. It performs best when they can really have that offensive balance, mixing up those two running backs in the passing attack. Obviously, I'm not concerned about Brady's under pressure. Brady is as good as anybody, and that's no problem. But I think if Atlanta end up behind in this game and have to revert to the pass and give up on the running game, I think that plays perfectly into New England's hands. The one question I would have for you, Jay, and I know you discussed that a wee bit yesterday on the Matt's pod, how are New England going to face Julio Jones? What's going to be the plan there, do you think?
I don't know. I know Tim mentioned that he would put Eric Rowe, who's the tallest cornerback on the team, and double up Julio with Eric Rowe and Devin McCourty. That's not usually the Patriots' MO. They're usually used to putting Butler on the number one and then double covering the other side. Because I do suspect, as I mentioned in the match, that we'll see a similar game plan against the Falcons' passing offenses they had against the Steelers passing offense and trying to shut down Antonio Brown. So I do think that Mohamed Sanu is a big X factor in this particular game, because I believe that will be the guy that will ultimately end up in single coverage. I think it'll be Butler and McCourty actually double covering Julio, and then letting Eric Rowe or Logan Ryan try and cover Mohamed Sanu and Taylor Gabriel. I think Taylor Gabriel is also another interesting X factor for this game, depending on how the Falcons decide to use him. Do they try and make him a little bit more of a Tyreek Hill type player that the Chiefs did with a lot of gadget plays? I think that could be a big factor. You know, how much has Kyle Shanahan been focused on this particular game plan versus how much of a job he's got ahead of him out in San Francisco, allegedly? I think that tends to be a little overrated, but I mean, we all are assuming Kyle Shanahan is going to end up as the head coach of the San Francisco 49ers. It's like the worst kept secret in the NFL right now. So, you know, that's definitely a factor, I think, to watch for in this game. But there you go.
Real quick pot.
Yeah, James.
Speaking from experience on Taylor Gabriel, if he's out wide and it looks like run, it's not run. it's Gabriel going deep. Trust me, I know all too well.
Excellent. All right. So speaking of those 49ers, as we are going to close the book now here on our coverage of Super Bowl 51 and move on to some of the other news happening in the NFL. The San Francisco 49ers hired a general manager, to the surprise of pretty much everyone in the football world. It was John Lynch, the man who may become a Hall of Fame safety, which is, I mean, he's got to have had the greatest year ever already. But let's hear what Charlie, our San Francisco 49ers fan, has to say about the future direction of those 49ers.
Here we are. This is Greg, and I'm here with Charlie for his reaction about his brand new GM, John Lynch. It's John Lynch, correct?
That is correct.
All right. So what level of grief are you on this one?
Initially, I was very shocked. Sitting around Sunday night watching TV with my wife, all of a sudden my phone just starts blowing up. It being John Lynch, I was very shocked. And really, it took me that night until I finally had a night to sleep on it. And understood, I think, why the Niners made the decision. The biggest thing I go to is this is Kyle Shanahan's guy. This is the guy that he is handpicked to be his GM to work with. What the Yorks have stated their biggest thing is relationships, to have a relationship where they're able to work together and make decisions. That doesn't necessarily mean that Lynch has no power, but it does mean that Lynch is more of a figurehead. And if you think of the greatness of the 49ers, the reason why I became a fan was the 90s. The 80s and 90s, they were the best team of the decade in the 80s. And the way they did it was with a man named Carmen Policy, who was a team president with very little power, and separated a middling owner named Eddie DeBartolo that tried to fire probably the best coach, maybe second best at this point. I mean, I might have to concede to Bill if he wins this weekend. Pod will probably love that. But he tried to fire Bill Walsh several times. And who stopped him? Carmen Policy.
Wow.
So I'll take that. I'll take a figurehead. I've always thought that the Niners need someone in order to be a buffer between Jed York and Prague Marathe and allow the football people to do the football things. And you can't tell me that John Lynch isn't going to be able to be that buffer. Prague and York, you know, look at Prague, look at York, and then look at John Lynch. They're not getting past John. So I'm actually decently excited about it. You know, Kyle Shanahan is smart. I know that he can scheme right. And now we just need to let John Lynch's guy, which is the college personnel guy from Denver. Unfortunately, I'm on the moment. I can't remember his name. He was just signed a couple days ago. Big John Elway guy. So very excited overall. After having that first night to think about it.
So like John's going to put the big general manager into this. So he's not going to be, I would assume he's not going to be like scouting players or managing the cap. He's literally going to be just managing the relationships from the ownership to the coaches and just organizing everything, right?
That's exactly right. So, you know, the way I would divvy out the power, if I had to guess, is, Prague Marathe is going to do salaries and contracts. He's going to be the contract guy, the cap management. And Lynch's second guy from Denver, I cannot remember his name, is going to be his college scout. And Lynch has been in the league for a long time and is very connected and plugged in. And I have a feeling that he's going to kind of do the pro personnel. The Niners have nearly $90 million in cap space this year. And I guarantee that that is going to be spent on veterans that John Lynch brings in. And, you know, we're not going to be good next year. There's no way we're a playoff team, you know, but if you give us another year or two, I think we could be very good with an extremely good coaching staff. You know, Shanahan is very, very late to the game to get good defensive and offensive assistance. So it's going to take us another year before he can get the right people in place, especially on the defensive side of the ball. I was really hoping we were going to get Gus Bradley, but, you know, he went to San Diego. So we'll see. Both of them have a 6-year deal, so they aren't worried about getting fired early. You know, these guys are in it for the long haul. They're rebuilding. You know, 3-4 years, we could be, you know, a great team again. We have some pieces.
All right. Optimism. So you're already over the whole thing. You're at acceptance and hope on the 7-stage scale here. That's
It took me 12 hours. Had to sleep on it. Now I feel a lot better. You know, we'll see how it goes. I can't wait to go into the draft and see who they pick and where they go at quarterback, especially. But really nothing can be confirmed, of course, until after the Super Bowl. But we're probably going to get the best coach that was available. If you look at all of them, I mean, some would argue Josh McDaniels. Some would say he's great because of Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. And the other one has been a coordinator in the NFL for 10 years and has created people like Robert Griffin. Matt Schwab was – had a career year under him, and that's, remember, what Matt Schaub was. So, you know, Kyle Shanahan even did well with Brian Hoyer in Cleveland. So we have a guy that maybe he can rehabilitate Cap, or maybe he's going to go draft his guy. We'll see.
So it's fascinating, too, because, I mean, like you said, they have, like, the number two pick. They're going to be hiring their coach, the coaching staff. I think we're going to be hearing a lot from you here, Charlie. And also, I know that the Redskin fans are trying to give away their quarterback. Are you a fan of that at all?
Oh, God, no. God, no. Don't bring in Cousins and then have to pay him through the nose. He is above average. I'll give him that. And he kind of has a workmanlike attitude, you know, and stuff like that. Everyone says he's a hard worker. But I honestly don't. I don't want him. I really hope that we kind of take a flyer on a quarterback in the maybe third round, second round, something like that. And then, you know, spend our draft, high draft pick. Hopefully the Browns are going to pass on Myles Garrett. We'll see. But I don't want to stretch on a quarterback and go and get a Deshaun Watson. I don't see how that fits in Kyle Shanahan's scheme anyway. So I think the probably next year's crop of quarterbacks is going to be better. And we are probably going to be in line to get one. So we'll see.
All right. Well, that's Charlie's take on, I guess, hopeful in San Francisco.
Absolutely. Just give us some time. We'll be back to greatness. And the NFC West hopefully is getting easier with the whole Carson Palmer news. Oh, taking his kids out of school, all that stuff. So selling his home. I like Carson, but I can only be hopeful, but I feel bad for Larry.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll throw this back to the pod. Thank you so much for your thoughts, Charlie.
Awesome. All right. Thank you.
So, Greg, thanks for stepping in and hosting there with Charlie. What were some of your takeaways from what Charlie had to say?
Well, I think the most interesting thing is how quickly he went through the seven steps of grief there, and he's actually optimistic about the hire. And I think he has reasons to be. I think John Lynch is outside the box. And we did mention this, and I think he's going to put the general manager back in the general manager. Like, I think he's going to be, you know, he's going to delegate, and I think it might turn out okay for them. It's interesting. At least they didn't, you know, retread the same guys that everyone else does.
Yeah, I think, I mean, the player turned broadcaster turned general manager didn't work out so much. Just go ask the Detroit Lions. But
Matt Mellon.
Yeah, thank you. But, you know, I guess we'll have to wait and see. It does seem interesting. You know, as we mentioned, the worst kept secret, Kyle Shanahan probably be the head coach. I think a lot of people are assuming that Shanahan's going to ultimately have the last say on sort of personnel moves and things of that nature. But, we'll see what John Lynch can do.
Isn't it interesting that he's coming, you know, he has all his roots to Denver, and they have Elway, who went to Stanford, and John Lynch was the Stanford, both former players with little experience running front offices, now both getting a chance. And I just think it's interesting parallels. Maybe it means nothing, but it's worth noting.
But Elway worked his way up through the front office to GM. I mean, I use work loosely because he was president of operations first before he was general manager.
And he also sold lots of used cars too. In between. So, yeah, there's just a lot of parallels, and it's interesting. I just wonder if some of that success for Elway bled over into this pick for the Niners.
What I find interesting about it is that having both these guys, well, Shanahan, we think, and Lynch, haven't they both got 6-year deals?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
That for me is a massive red flag.
So the next news item on my list here is the Las Vegas Raiders of Oakland apparently is not going to happen, or is certainly in jeopardy of happening, because the people that were going to fund the move to LA are pulling themselves out of funding. This certainly would be a major issue for the Raiders if they can't move there. However, there is one city that has sort of raised their hand and said, we'll take you, and that is San Diego. Could there be anything more appropriate than the Los Angeles Raiders, Oakland Raiders, moving to San Diego? to become the San Diego Raiders. That would be an interesting thing to watch, Kevin.
Oh, I think it would be very interesting. And I'm not sure the specifics of why this Las Vegas thing is in jeopardy of not happening. But my gut says it has something to do with Ice Cube and his former NWA members not wanting not wanting the Raiders to leave California. So maybe they stepped in and took their old persona from the 90s. But anyway, that would be great for the San Diego area. Although everyone's been making fun of them for the last 2 weeks, I've tried to not do that because I've always actually liked San Diego. I've visited it once or twice. Too. Very lovely area. So I wish nothing but the best for them, and I hope they do get a new football team.
Last week, Jay, we gave the reason why the deal was going to collapse when we threatened the NFL with Monty chaining himself to the Oakland Coliseum. That clearly has paid dividends.
I think it is. I think that's a big issue. But, you know, the Raiders may not be out of Oakland yet. There's still Ronnie Lott trying to make a last-ditch effort to save a team that he did play for briefly. Although I think most people, when they think of Ronnie Lott, think of the San Francisco 49ers more than the Oakland Raiders.
I thought you were going to say Nine Fingers.
Yeah, exactly what I was thinking, Greg. Yeah.
Well, there's certainly that.
Oh, man.
There's no sadness with that. That's like the greatest football story of all time. I mean,
yeah, it's absolutely fun. You're right, Greg. It's great.
Yeah.
One more piece of news here.
I bet you, hey, Jay, I tell you, that was when football was real. That wouldn't even have made the injury report.
yes it would, which is a great transition to this story before the last item I want to get to. Pat McAfee, the Colts punter, who's 29 years old, has announced his retirement after only 8 seasons in the league. Many of us are sort of, you know, wondering why in the world would a punter decide to retire from the league after 8 seasons. I know that McAfee's got a lot of business deals outside of the NFL. My guess is football is actually getting in the way. We know that punters aren't necessarily the richest players on a football field. But I know our Colts superfan Dan mentioned that he's apparently got some knee issues as well. James, you have any thoughts here on Pat McAfee retiring at age 29 as a punter?
Kind of young for a punter to be retiring. I can't imagine his base salary being that far from the average of what punters make. If he has other lucrative business deals outside and he wants to invest more time in those, more power to him. Shocking. Not really. We've seen a number of players over the last 3 to 4 years retire before the age of 30, mostly defensive players and linemen. But, I mean, this is probably a little bit out of the norm. But at the end of the day, and sorry, Pat McAfee, he's a punter.
Well, I mean, McAfee was also in the Pro Bowl.
True.
But apparently he's on his way to have his third knee surgery in 4 years. 2 years remaining on his 5-year contract worth $14.5 million. The thing that's really odd about this, but then again, Pat McAfee is an odd dude, made the announcement on Comedy Central and said he plans to work for Barstool Sports.
Jay, I was watching the rundown last night and I was convinced that it was a joke, and I get into work this morning and I was see that he actually is retiring. Oh my God, I couldn't believe it. But yeah, if you guys haven't seen the rundown yet on Comedy Central, give it a view. You're welcome, Barstool. You're welcome.
So, you know, good luck to Pat McAfee. And this brings us to the last item. I think I'm going to go a little bit more in depth on this last item with maybe Matt Chatham or another player that if we get the opportunity to talk to them in the offseason. But the NFL also released some of their injury results from this past year. And, you know, one of the things that they're really, you know, happy about is that, you know, concussions this year were down 11% compared to last season. However, they're still higher than they were in 2013 and 2014. And I'd like to call BS, first of all, on that. They break it down even further, talking about how much concussions are down in preseason practices and preseason games, and then regular season games are down 8.7%. And I even read a stat about, you know, they've added extra people, extra athletic trainers in the media booth so that they can call injury timeouts so that they can get into the concussion protocol on the sidelines. And it was mentioned that about 2/3 of the players that go into the concussion protocol are diagnosed not having a concussion, which is absolutely ridiculous. To me, the concussion reporting seems to be a little off track, and going a little bit more deeper into the injuries. The number of ACLs this year was 56 ACL injuries this season in the NFL, which is slightly less than what happened last season. And MCL injuries were also slightly less than what happened last season, but still higher than they were the two previous years. Which is just absolutely, I don't know. I don't know what to make of all this injury stuff, but I think the NFL is doing a wonderful job of covering their butts.
Can I jump in on the concussion part first?
Please do.
With the personnel they have in the booth, you know, watching that, you do take notice of it, because between players on the field, referees, and whoever's up in the booth watching these players, anybody who looks like they've taken a severely bad shot, you know, and granted, I grew up in an era of football where the big hit was applauded more than anything else. If they look woozy in any way whatsoever, they're getting them off the field. So I would say that's a plus as far as how that plays out number-wise, as far as concussions being down. I'm not sure I completely believe the NFL stats on that, but I will say those players who have come out the game have been given the full attention either on the sideline or taken into the locker room to get fully checked out. And I would say, at least from my eyeball test from the games that I was able to watch this season, even outside of the Eagles, that about half those players returned to the game. So, at least they're being proactive about it as far as trying to catch it as soon as possible. But to say across the board that it's working in any significant way is probably too early to tell, considering this is the second year they've implemented this with medical personnel in the booth. So I would wait another 3 years or so and at least do it in a 5-year span when you actually have more data to make such a statement as far as whether this technique is actually working broad spectrum and not just, hey, 2 years in, the numbers are down, but, you know, before this point, we've got 50 plus years of history where players have pretty much gone back in because, oh, your bell's just rung. Get your butt back out there. You're a man. Play the sport like a warrior type thing. And, you know, unless you're out cold, you don't come out of the game. So I like to see this progress forward a couple more years before the NFL puts out such a statement. Just my two cents.
Good job, James. I like it. A couple other notes from the injury thing. The change in rules did reduce kickoff returns by about 4%, and the data on kickoff returns show a 2-year decrease in hamstring strains and general stability on the number of concussions on this particular play, although there was a low in 2014, meaning there were still more concussions on kickoff returns than there were in 2014. This is the one that I know Matt Chatham loves is in quotes, the most. We continue to monitor Thursday night games and duration of play, and once again, we found there is no evidence of an increase in injuries when teams participate in a Thursday night game, or examined another way, injury rates do not increase when teams have shorter intervals between games. That's just baloney. There's no way on earth that any respectable doctor, scientist, or anyone would say, hey, if you play the game of football, especially professional football, on a shorter time period, that you're not going to receive more injuries. It's just, I can't believe they would issue a statement that's just stupid. It's just stupid.
Well, it is a $9 billion industry, and they're in the habit of making more money. So I agree with you. But again, this is where they're just doling out the facts that make this situation look better than it is. Because when you come out of a game on Sunday, typically the decision of where the players are going to play or not are generally made for the next week around Thursday, at least beginning at that point through Saturday. And at that point, you know who's going to play for the next Sunday or Monday night game or not. In a shorter week, anybody who you have any concern with coming out of Sunday's game with an injury, odds are 9 times out of 10, they're not playing Thursday night unless it's something where, well, if as long as they don't practice on it, they'll be good to go on Thursday. But you're talking about people with severe ankle sprains who are going to be held out of practice and then, quote, game time decisions on Thursday night who ultimately don't play. Any knee tweaking whatsoever simply don't play. And, you know, you tend to have a lot of backup players, you know, elevated from the practice squad playing more significant roles on Thursday night games. And outside of, I say, star players who are hell-bent on playing no matter what, pretty much contributes to the quality of the football games we've been getting on Thursday night these last couple of years. So, yeah, it's just them giving the information they want to give to say, hey, the product is still good. Here are the numbers to support it, but we're not going to tell you the whole story, even though you can see it with your own eyes.
All right, Greg, you have one more story you want to talk about here?
Yeah, it was maybe a little bit on the radar, but Carson Palmer is apparently, you know, he's 35, 36 years old. He apparently has moved his kids out of the local schools there in Arizona. And there's a question if he's going to return to the team at all. Maybe he will retire. Maybe they'll cut him. Maybe he just wants out. So it's just an interesting sub, you know, as we're getting ready for the draft, ready for free agency, just one of the stories to be watching for. And I got to ask Neil, like, Cardinals got the 13th pick. How about a little trade for your quarterback there?
Yeah, I'm probably one of the minority of Washington fans who would trade Kirk. But remember, the non-exclusive franchise tag would give us 2 first-round picks if we traded Kirk. So we'd be needing a little bit more than that from Arizona.
Good luck. When's the last time a team gave up a first-round pick for a quarterback? And let's not talk about Sam Bradford in the Minnesota.
Sam Bradford, probably.
did the Raiders give a first-round pick for Carson Palmer?
Jay Cutler, 2 first-round picks he gave it for, I think.
Yeah. All right. Well, I mean, I don't think
Jimmy Garoppolo.
Listen, hey, timeout. With all due respect to Kirk Cousins, I don't believe he's worth 2 first-round draft choices. Not to mention, Kirk Cousins isn't under contract with the Washington Redskins currently, right?
That's right. Well, that's right. But I do always worry when somebody starts a sentence off with all due respect.
Well, and then I'll throw my due respect to Patrick as well. The Patriots aren't getting. I doubt the Patriots will get a first round pick for Garoppolo.
No,
they may want one, but I don't think they're going to get one.
Correct.
Not to mention, I don't think that's necessarily in the Patriots' best interest to trade away Garoppolo. I'd be more willing to trade away Jacoby Brissett than I would be Jimmy Garoppolo. Yeah.
I think, Jay, what you might find with Cousins, if they were to move him on, they would wait for the season and franchise the guy and then agree with some sort of deal with the team, and the team would agree a long-term deal with Cousins, and then he would be traded. That's how it would work.
The only other thing, I mean, I don't know, where's the story about Carson Palmer removing his kids out of Arizona schools?
It was on Pro Football Talk 2 days ago or yesterday.
Oh, because I know Larry
Fitzgerald.
I know Larry Fitzgerald has said that he's returning to the Cardinals. I don't know if that would have any impact on Carson Palmer leaving. According to this article I'm reading about Fitzgerald, he said that the two of him and Carson haven't had discussions about their future plans. So I don't know.
But Jay, Greg is doing his best Ian Rappaport impersonation today with breaking news. You'll be aware now that he's just broken the major story that Punxsutawney Phil has declared that he saw his shadow, and there's going to be 6 more weeks of winter, And maybe in New England, winter is coming.
Oh, how dare you? How dare
winter
you?
Winter is always coming.
Last item, for those of you who have been following along with our NFL.com playoff challenge group, Houston James is currently our leader with 473 points, followed by Susanna. I don't know who Susanna is. It'll probably turn out to be Charlie, who has 468 points. I'm in a distant ninth place with 415 points. I have a lot of Patriots going in the Super Bowl. The two Falcons I have, I'm getting double points for Freeman, and I put Mohamed Sanu in at wide receiver on my fantasy team. Otherwise, it's Patriots across the board for the other positions. Just so you know, if you want to play along, you can check us out. Go to the NFL Playoff Challenge on NFL.com. Search the Next Fan Up group. There's currently 14 users in the group. So I wouldn't suggest joining now because you'll have no chance of winning. Perhaps you could win the weekly. Anyway, it's a lot of fun. It's another way to enjoy the game coming up. You know, I mentioned during my conversation with the Mats, I've been wearing my Patriots apparel all week long. Today, I'm wearing my Edelman, you know, T-shirt jersey. Tomorrow will be a beautiful T-shirt celebrating the Super Bowl victory in Super Bowl 49. And as I mentioned on the mats, my away Bledsoe jersey is awaiting me on Sunday to cheer on the Patriots in Houston. We will have I do not have pants and socks, no Neil, but I do have special. I do wear navy blue sweatpants. I also have special underwear and special socks that I do wear on game days. So there you go. My uniform. I also will be wearing my Super Bowl 49 champions hat, as I have done all season on game day. So there you go. The spread, by the way, also will be wings and pizza. I will not be partaking in the pizza as I've lost 19 pounds since January 1st on my way back I was.
Years ago. Congrats.
I will be only partaking in the wings, which, you know, one could argue not necessarily the healthiest choice, but healthier than obviously potatoes and pizza. Potatoes in the, you know, potato skins. They're quite delicious, but I will not be partaking in those either this Sunday. No beer either, which is tough to do during a football game. Yeah, I know. A lot of empty calories in beer, people. And I like the thicker, darker beers. Which tend to have more calories than, you know, the stuff people think is beer. The stuff that Neil looks at and goes, oh, that's water.
Yeah.
So there you go. NextFanUp@gmail.com. We've got plenty of great podcasts still to come. We'll have our Super Bowl recap immediately following the Super Bowl. Justin will be hosting, Tim and Patrick, and I believe yours truly will also be attending that podcast Sunday evening after the Super Bowl, win or lose. You'll either hear me crowing or you'll hear me crying, which is always fun to do either way. And then we'll be off for a couple of weeks. It's the only time we ever take time off on this particular podcast, and we'll be back talking about the off season as we get into the combine, which is coming up here in the next couple of weeks in Indianapolis. And of course, we have lots of NFL draft coverage coming your way, so you're not going to want to miss a thing. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, AHA Radio. You can always ask Alexa to play the Next Fan Up podcast. She will love to do so for you. And follow us along on Twitter at NFU Podcast. And if you want to be a super fan, send in those applications, nextfanup@gmail.com. So for Greg, for Neil, for James, for Kevin, for Tim, for Patrick, for the entire NFL and all of the guests that we've had all season long, we thank you very much for listening all the way to the end. And with that, here's Jeff Fisher. There you have it.
Well, I think we learned today that, you know, this game is four quarters long.
Yes.
I guess the other question I have, Jay, is how will Atlanta will try and put Gabriel and their two running backs out into the flat against your linebackers in pass coverage? Will that be a problem for New England?
The Patriots won't try and cover Gabriel with a linebacker, and if they do, then yes, that would be a huge problem.
Don't the Patriots play like a nickel as their base defense now, like 5 DBs?
Well, that's sort of what Matt Williamson was talking about. If they're playing in the nickel, then it'll be like Daron Harmon.
Yeah, most teams
on Taylor Gabriel. So I believe there'll be some sort of safety or nickelback on Taylor Gabriel. Won't be a linebacker.
And Jay, trust me,
if Rob Ninkovich is out in coverage, that's a problem.
over under 28 carries for Blunt.
I think it'll be under, because the Patriots have done such a good job of regulating all the carries for the three backs that they have, Lewis, James, and Blunt. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Lewis has actually had more snaps at running back during the playoff games than Blunt has.
So maybe the better question is, will the Patriots run the ball more times than they pass the ball?
No.
Do you think in this game?
No, because the Patriots offense is still predicated on Tom Brady in that passing game. So Keanu Neal,
they can find a hole in the Falcons defense, much like that AFC Championship game a couple of years ago against the Colts, where basically like what their first 15 plays were like runs. They ran for like over 300 yards against them. I could see more runs.
Yeah, I can see New England running that clock down all game long to keep Ryan off the field.
I could see it as well. I mean, I was also meant to bring up a Vic Beasley interesting stat, but I forgot.
Is he over 6 foot?
If the Patriots do want to run the ball a lot this game, Vic Beasley has actually played only 4 snaps this postseason when there's been 2 wide receivers or less on the field. So if they want to find a way to get Vic Beasley off the field, definitely their best pass rusher. That'll be a good way to do it. Especially with Adrian Claiborne, obviously now he's been out for a while now with a season ending injury, that even makes their already weak defensive rushing attack even weaker. So the Patriots, they just have they can do whatever they want against the Falcons. And that's why I picked them, because the Falcons just aren't going to stop them.
That's apart from your 6 foot thingy, that's the best stat we've had on this pod tonight. That's terrific. That's a great bit of information, Kevin.
What about this stat?
Climb
the mountain.
Okay.
Keep going.
I usually don't stop while I'm ahead, so I'll continue that trend. In the 2 years Deion Lewis has been with the Pats, he's played in 16 games. Of course, he's had the injuries. The Pats are, 16-0, so I see no reason for them to be 17-0 come Sunday.